Welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. Today with me, I have John Seddon from Vanguard Consulting. Hello, John.
Hello.
So first of all, John, for the benefit of our both readers and listeners, can you tell us a bit about you and about the work that you do?
Well, I'm an occupational psychologist, and the kind of work that I do, well, I only do one thing, really. I help organisations, service organisations, change from a conventional command and control design into a systems design.
Brilliant. I was introduced to you and some of the work that you do and some of your writing by a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And he said, you have to check this out, systems thinking, John Seddon, Vanguard, etc. You know, you love it. And so I did a little bit, I came along to the talk that you did in Crawley, and you talk about the Vanguard method and it being a combination of systems thinking and intervention sort of theory. Can you tell me a little bit more about sort of that and how it applies in the work that you do? Because you talk about service organizations and
yeah.
I'm particularly interested in customer service and how to make that better.
Yeah, me too.
Let's do this briefly.
I mean, systems thinking is all about a better way to design and manage work.
Mm-hmm.
And intervention theory, which is actually the harder part to learn,
mm-hmm.
is how do you make that change? You see, Deming taught me that mankind invented management. And so,
uh-huh.
for example, I know, because I was taught by him, how all arbitrary measures serve to suboptimize systems, make performance worse. But if you stand in a room and tell managers that, they'll rationalise and defend.
Yes.
But if you show them how to study their organisation, they will see it for themselves. And that hence, so the Vanguard method is all about how do you study different types of service organisations to understand what's wrong with the way you currently think. That becomes a platform. It energises leaders to think differently and design differently. As a consequence, get much better performance. I mean, much along the same lines that you're interested in, you know, our clients get rapid improvements in customer service,
uh-huh.
and complementary improvements in morale.
Right.
Because the design's better for customers and better for staff.
So does that mean that you separate out, if you design, you know, the system to work better, as it were,
yeah.
actually the benefit of that, because of there's a benefit that you actually get improved morale and productivity,
yes.
and employee engagement rather than actually dealing with them as separate things.
Absolutely. And indeed, it's a mistake to do an employee engagement program in a command and control organization. It's fatuous. Because, you know, you send them off to do happy clappy engagement exercises and then you put them back into a system that disengages them. Bloody stupid. Culture change is free. Because your culture is a product of your system. The way your people behave is governed by the system. Change the system, behaviour changes.
Interesting. I mean, it's fascinating. And so, John, why do not more organisations follow this type of approach? Or
well, more and more do. I mean, every country that we've begun working, we grow.
Uh-huh.
Because the evidence speaks for itself.
Yes.
And it's evidence that attracts newcomers to it. Of course, you have to disabuse them of their notions of intervention. You know, how do you get there? But you know, results talk.
Yes.
But the thing that in a sense naturally stops it growing is that it's counterintuitive.
Right.
And so you've got to go through the unlearn step before you can learn.
Right, and that's the bit that people find really hard, because I guess it's
yeah.
that they've invested all of this time and energy into building themselves and their organisations around a particular way of thinking.
That's right. But, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about the way they approach you. They say, oh, look, well, you know, what you did for that company is amazing. We want you to do it for us. And you say, okay, fine. Well, you know, clear your diary and we'll take you out and start helping you to see your system. We call it scoping because it's a word they're kind of familiar with.
Yes.
And then they say, oh, no, we really want you to do this, but could you go and do it with those people over there? You know? And we say, no, because if we go and help those people over there and they change a part of your organisation and you don't understand it, and I mean understand it,
yes.
then there'll be a train wreck. And I don't want to be part of a train wreck. You know, that slows things down. I mean, we've got a UK bank at the moment that from when they first approached us to when they might start could be in excess of a year.
Yes.
Because they think they've got other more important things to do.
Well,
which are all things that they might find out were not very clever things to do, but we will wait for them.
Well, it's interesting because I was doing some work with another large financial services organization, international one, and I was talking to them about sort of linking together. They were having a bit of a wrestling match, which was who owns the word engagement? Is it, if you put customer in front of it, then it's marketing. If you put employee in front of it, then it's HR. And then they have this bit of a wrestling match. And so they asked me to come in and talk to them about some sort of ideas and about, sort of get some agreement about it. And I ended up saying, well, actually suggesting, why don't you just go and talk to your people? They'll tell you what to do. They'll tell you what's wrong with what you're doing currently. And don't go in there with any preconceived ideas.
Yeah.
Just ask them what they think. They'll tell you.
I wouldn't advise that.
You wouldn't?
No, I wouldn't advise that. You see, I mean, if you take the typical, say, service centre worker,
mm-hmm.
they certainly will be able to talk about some of the stuff that gets in the way,
mm-hmm.
but they wouldn't be able to articulate a different perspective. They wouldn't, for example, take an easy concept, recognise that a whole load of demand coming into their service centre was failure demand.
Right.
And indeed, if you pointed it out to them that it's failure demand, they might feel nervous because they've been conditioned by command and control managers to think that failure equals they failed.
Right.
Of course, that's not true. It's the system has failed. So people who do the work are as socialised as managers into the command and control view of the world. And you have to help them get out of that.
And is that where the intervention
That's correct,
comes yeah. into it?
Yeah, I mean, if you take something simple, again, let's go to the service centre. We have gone through a long period of time where we've, command and control managers have taken the view that the first level manager in a service organisation needs to be a people manager.
Right.
So they can manage their people.
Right.
Well, that's all bollocks, really. If you tell them that's bollocks, they'll fight with you because they spent years learning how to be a really good people manager, how to do one-to-ones, all that kind of stuff they're taught.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take them on a little learning loop, they'll discover it's a waste of time.
Right.
Now you've got them in a useful place because now you can help them work out what is a good use of their time. And so, you effectively, to take Denning's idea, you move them away from working on the 5% of people to working on the 95% of the system.
Right.
And when you've got first level managers who understand how to work on the system rather than the people, they never go back.
Okay.
But if you went and asked them for their ideas, they wouldn't come up with ideas about how to work on the system.
Okay.
They'd come up with problems and issues that are related to their current life.
And also, what you refer to as failure demand.
Well, they wouldn't see it as failure demand. They wouldn't see that managing the people is working on the 5%. They wouldn't see that they've got a de facto purpose, which is to meet their daily targets.
Right.
And they wouldn't see that there's something wrong with the idea that every customer contact is an opportunity to sell. They wouldn't see that current incentives for selling and upselling and doing the kinds of things they do in service organisations is actually damaging sales. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't
right.
know. This won't pop out of them if you ask. This has to be, it has to emerge for them through studying things, and they realise that they will realise a number of counterintuitive truths, and that's what disturbs them away from their conventional perspective and therefore their conventional role.
Now, I mean, you've written a series of books on this, and a lot of the recent ones are Delivering Public Services at Work, in Volume 2. I mean, you seem to have done a lot of work in the public sector. Is this type of thinking and approach, is it more accepted in the public sector than the private sector, or is it just that's where you've started?
Oh, no, most of our work is in the private sector.
Okay.
I write a lot about the public sector because I think it's my civil duty to explain to everybody where Whitehall gets it seriously wrong and costs us a fortune.
Right. But, so that's sort of different.
The bulk of Vanguard's work is in the private sector.
Ah, right. Because I remember when I came to your talk, Aviva that was there, Rob Brown that was there, yeah. And I actually spoke to Rob, and I'm going to arrange a time to have a chat to him about the work that you've done together. Uh-huh. It's fascinating. But he talked about some fantastic results.
Yeah.
how you'd reduced, you've been able, in working together, that you've been able to reduce call center costs, improve productivity, customer satisfaction, NPS went through the roof, all of those different sort of things.
Yes, not me.
Not you, no.
They.
Yes, they.
They. This comes back to, you know, the hard part about the work is the intervention theory work.
Yes.
This is not a model where a consultant comes in and does it to you.
No, indeed.
This is a model where a consultant comes in and helps you do it to yourself.
Well, yes.
Otherwise you won't learn.
You have to learn a new way of working.
That's right.
And a new way of thinking.
Yeah.
So, John, this is all fascinating. I think I might have to go and relearn some stuff. Which is brilliant. If I was to say to you, if somebody was intrigued by this approach, intrigued enough to say, that's interesting, I'd like to learn more about it and to sort of start sort of on that journey, where would you suggest that they started? What's the first thing to do, other than pick up the phone and call you, of course?
Well, of course they can. I mean, you'll see from my current website is full of articles which are there to educate people, to re-educate people, to develop curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And so read articles, read books. There's quite a lot of video on the web.
Okay.
It serves the same sort of purpose. And of course, we're building an electronic learning system.
Yes.
Which is designed especially for that purpose.
Okay. And is there any particular standout books that you would recommend, sort of learning materials?
I think it's wrong to recommend specific things. I think it's a good idea to recommend people to go to the site, have a little surf around, see what intrigues them, follow what intrigues you.
Right. So it's not. It's in a sense that the approach isn't prescriptive, as it were. It's more of like it's a process of discovery.
Correct. And that's what I mean. So, for example, you'll see on the new e-learning site, it is deliberately designed as a heuristic learning device, which, as you know, means learning by discovery.
Yes, indeed.
You can start where you want to start. You can go where you want to go, and follow your own interests. And that's important, you see, because changing thinking has to be a pull. Can't be a push.
It's one of the things that we know and we feel naturally that actually learning by discovery is better. But sometimes when we think about change and learning and education, a lot of it's is learning by directive in a way, and by curriculum rather than just exploration.
Yeah,
fascinating. John. I'm just thinking as I go, and I'm just thinking about how I think and almost some of the stuff that I write about as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm looking for pointers, and you think there are no pointers. Go off and discover.
Yes, but you can. Yes, not so much having pointers, but you can put out there a load of things that might cause people to get curious.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. So I mean, one of the big problems, for example, you get if you're working in a private sector company that operates worldwide, is you can't do it all in one go.
Right.
So you have to think about how do we help people who aren't actually in the middle of redesigning, studying and redesigning a service, how do we help the others kind of get interested? So you can run interventions that are not designed to help them change their system, they're just designed to get them started, to get them thinking, to get them seeing some things they've never thought about before.
When you talk about that and that sort of re-seeing, relearning, reinvestigating sort of how things are, how we tell ourselves how things are. I mean, is that more, would that be a workshop based, or is that more of an experiential thing, or how would that work?
It is experiential when you do the action part, but you've got to use some kind of medium like a classroom or the internet or something to tell them where to go and what to look for.
Right.
Yeah, so take the simplest concept, failure demand.
Uh-huh.
Everyone gets that, demand caused by a failure to do something, right for a customer.
Sure.
So, get yourself down to the call centre, plug in and listen to calls.
Right.
And every call you listen to, ask yourself the question, is this a value demand? Is that why we're here? Or is this a failure demand?
Yes.
Representing a failure to do something or do something right for the customer. That'll make you sit up.
Now, yes.
You could then make a conventional command and control mistake and say, oh, well, the reason we've got failure demand is because the bloody people don't do as they should, and you'd be wrong.
And therefore we talk about adding more technology and more people.
Yeah.
Rather than actually solving the root cause of the problem.
That's correct. The failure demand is caused by service design.
Right.
And it's not about your processes, it's not about your people, it's about your kind of design architecture. You know, if you've got a front office, back office design, and you've standardised the work, and you specialise the work, and you manage people's activity, and you've got first level managers managing the people, then all of those things will create failure demand.
Mm-hmm.
That's your problem.
Yeah.
People find it hard to accept, but that's why you have to then go and study to see how those things do create failure demand.
I guess it's people getting over the idea that they're wrong and the things that they've built isn't necessarily fit for purpose.
Yeah, that's right. And see, they built all those things because they were focused on cost. And as I say to managers, when you manage costs, your costs always go up.
Right. Whilst my friend has been... We've been talking about this, and I've been talking about it on the periphery for some time. I know that I need to go and do some learning or unlearning or relearning myself, completely equipped to talk about this. But what I will do is I will write all this up and then put all sorts of pointers into your website and other resources. So, John, one final thing before I wrap up is I always end these conversations with one question, and that is, is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Only the new site.
Very good.
And I wouldn't be shameless at all about it. in a sense, as we discussed earlier, it's a pull site, not a push site.
Yes, indeed.
You can take it or leave it.
Fantastic.
And I think one of the beautiful things about my work is that for the last 30-odd years, I and my 60-odd colleagues have had quite a hard life.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a conventional command and control organization, you start making a change. As I said earlier, you can't get everybody learning and unlearning at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
People come out and attack you. They always attack you in the same ways. It's just the way they think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come at you with their current worldview. They try to build what you're doing into their worldview, but it's their worldview that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I can see a future where the only people we're helping are people who started on their way up the learning curve from the new site. So we'll only find ourselves helping people who are constructively engaging as opposed to being assholes.
Well, I shall do what I can to help by spreading the word and pointing as many people as I can.
Thank you.
And I'll be there. We'll sow some seeds of sedition.
Okay.
John, thank you for your time today.
Okay, Adrian, thanks.
You take care. Have a good day.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.